Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. What are you going to do in case of an emergency? Not going to run. We're going to do this and we're going to learn, you know, five tips on surviving triage by our good friend, veterinary technician specialist in emergency and critical care, CVT, Erica Brandt. How are you, Erica?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. I love talking about what to do in an emergency.
Yes, I love this. And check this out to our listeners. Listen to her wonderful background. So she's the clinical manager of surgery and anesthesia at West Vet in Boise, Idaho. She passed her BTS exam in 2009 to become one of the first BTS in Idaho. Congratulations with that. She served as the president of the Idaho Society of Veterinary Technicians and Assistants for 10 years. She's passionate about emergency medicine, anesthesia, surgery, feline medicine, and the profession of veterinary technology in general. When not helping pets, teaching, or mentoring her amazing team, she enjoys anything outdoors with her husband, Curtis, and her two wonderful children, Sean and Alexandra. So I love that you're such an advocate for emergency medicine and the technician. So thank you for all that you do. It's important.
It's a great profession. So we have a lot of hardworking people out there. So it's easy to be an advocate for something so wonderful.
Yeah. I love hearing that too. I agree with you too. All right. So Erica, help. We have a dog that's coming in. We have a cat that's coming in. What do we do? What are some tips that you can help us out with so we can survive triage?
Oh my goodness. So triage is pretty intimidating. One of the first things obviously is to just take a deep breath and remain calm and really think about, you know, what is the patient telling us and what is the client telling us? You know, we can really pick up some great key points just by observing and listening to the information that's provided initially.
Okay. So tip number one sounds like to me would be to remain calm, right?
Right. Okay. Situations.
Yeah. So just like gather the situation, collect yourself. All right. And then what would be tip number two?
Tip number two, I would have to say, is really look at your patient. You know, as a veterinary technician, one of the things I ask myself constantly through the day, whether it's triage and an emergency coming in or a patient that I'm taking care of in the hospital, is what does this patient need from me right now? Triage is a little bit tricky sometimes. It's a high emotional situation. And so being able to kind of step back from the emotion of it and really listen to why is this pet here? What was the situation that happened to that pet? And what do they look like when they come in the hospital? And it's always very tricky because a lot of pets come in and the clients will say, oh my gosh, he looked terrible at home. Or, you know, he just got in a trauma situation where he just got hit by a car and he comes in wagging his tail. So we have to make sure that we are aware of the situation that happened to that pet and really pay attention to what they look like coming in and keep an eye on that situation. So I guess my first tip besides take a deep breath and remain calm would be really listen to what happened to that pet and use your common sense and your experience to tell you if this patient was hit by a car just because it came in wagging its tail, just because it has some adrenaline, does that mean that this pet is really doing okay? And just really listen to those keywords that you're hearing to tell you, you know, what should I be watching for on this pet?
Right. That's really great. I want to share a story with you. I had a four-year-old German Shepherd dog that came in on emergency. The owner thought she was dying, and she did come in on a gurney looking as if she was dying. But to your point, you know, listening to them and realizing, like, assessing the gums, like doing your basic things that we all learned to do, and that we were all, you know, some of the technicians a little frazzled. They said, my gosh, like her gums are pink. Her heart rate was, she was bradycardic. Her pulses were a little weak on that side, but she wasn't like traumatized. There was no obvious that, but we asked a little bit further and mom was saying this just happened all of a sudden. There was no hemoabdomen. We did everything, but we took some x-rays and we noticed some microcardia. And I said, ooh, what do you think we got going on here, guys? And, you know, we think it was Addison's is really what it was, but it's such a great tool to know that, like, work together, you know, use your basic principles that you're talking about there too, looking at like hydration status and gums. I think that's great. So thank you for sharing that. All right. So I guess it sounds like we have what, three more tips to learn, right, or four?
Right. Okay. We can talk about tips all day, but let's talk about the next three. The next tip would be, you know, vitals are fine. We always talk about TPR, temperature, pulse, respiration. And really, honestly, the first thing that I'm looking at for that patient is what is their mental status. So I actually, instead of doing TPR, temperature, pulse, respiration, I do a sequence called RAP or RAP. So respiration, alertness, and perfusion. Those are things that I want to try to assess in that patient right away. Those are typically the things that tell us, does this patient need emergency treatment right away? Respiratory status is the first one. So when we look at RAP, our R is respiration. And obviously we want to count respiratory rate, but especially in dogs, it's very hard to assess. They're panting when they're excited. They're panting when they've experienced a trauma. So respiratory rate doesn't give me a lot. So what I really want technicians to look at is that patient's respiratory status. Is it really struggling to breathe? Because breathing should be something we do fairly easily. But if a patient is in distress, if a patient needs help right away, we will see a different respiratory pattern. We will hear noises with breathing. We will see something that tells us that that patient is really focused on its breathing or really struggling to breathe. And I think anytime a client comes in and says, you know, anything with struggling breathing, even something along the lines of choking, because sometimes clients don't know that it's a respiratory issue and they'll say, it looks like she's choking, or it looks like she can't breathe, or, you know, things like that, that we need to watch for with respiration. The next thing is alertness. So RAP, the next step I would look at is alertness. And alertness is also very hard. Clients will come in and say, oh my gosh, he was so down at home and now he looks better coming in. Right. And so they do rally a little bit for us, right? They're excited to go on their car ride, whether it's a dog or a cat. There is a change in mentation depending on how sick they are when they come to the hospital, but really watching that mentation. So one thing that I try to do is while I'm talking to the client, because pets change. If we go out immediately to that pet and we're greeting them and we're petting them, they're really going to kind of perk up for us. And so one thing that I do is I try to assess mental status when the pet doesn't think that I am addressing them. So as I'm talking to the client, as I'm listening to the client, I'm really watching, does this patient get quiet? Does this patient lay down? You know, in a busy emergency triage situation, in the waiting room, in the exam room, if a pet really lays down and gets quiet, they probably are lethargic. They might be a little depressed at home. And so we might see that change in mental status. And of course, anything like vocalizing inappropriately or laterally recumbent, anything with mental status that way, we pretty much know right away that that patient needs something from us. But really watching how lethargic that is or patient is, or listening to the owner tell us about changes in mentation in that pet while it's been at home, is the next thing. And then perfusion. Which perfusion is a little bit hard to assess from across the room, like respiration and alertness. We can get those tips just from seeing that patient in the room. Perfusion, we kind of need to put our hands on the pet, you know, checking things like you said, like mucous membrane color, feeling for pulses, you know, assessing the heart rate right away. Those are all things that we need to do right away that may not be quite as important as something like a temperature right off the bat. So those are the three things that I assess as far as the vitals and information that I need from that pet right away. So I use that RAP versus TPR when I'm assessing quickly.
That's great. Really, really powerful there. So thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. And so what would be another tip? I love this. I'm writing them down.
Great. We've already kind of touched on it, but one thing I do want to mention is learning clients speak and really listening to our clients. I know sometimes it's difficult on a busy triage day, but some things that we need to realize and we need to remember is this is that client's possibly worst day, and we are meeting them on very difficult terms. And the more experienced we get, the more skilled we get as technicians, you know, we know medical terms and we know disease processes, and owners often don't. And so really listening to keywords, and technicians will start picking this up, like a patient who is experiencing a GDV. Clients might not have any idea what a GDV is, but they will give you key tips, like any unproductive retching, dry heaving, not wanting to lay down. Most cats that I see come in blocked. The owners will often relay that they think their pet is constipated. So owners want to kind of put a name to it, and they want to try to figure out what's going on. It's kind of a human nature thing. But really listening to what they say as far as, and picking out those clinical signs that they're seeing. So they're not, the cat might not be constipated, but what the owner is seeing is straining or, you know, inappropriate urination or hiding or those kind of things. So we, you know, listening to clients, being very empathetic to the process that they're going through, and understanding that they're not medically trained, but they might have some really good information for us. You know, sometimes patients will, or owners will come in and they're pretty hysterical. I had a similar experience to yours with the younger dog, but this dog seemed fine. You know, I had a client very hysterical, very concerned. She was convinced her pet was dying. And I'm trying to get a history as the pet's dragging me around the waiting room. And I'm like, this pet's probably, you know, seems to be doing okay. But under further assessment, we found out that the pet actually had been hit by a larger dog at the dog park and really kind of knocked down and had a moment where he didn't really want to get up at the dog park. But coming into us, he was a young, otherwise healthy golden retriever, but he actually had ruptured his spleen and was bleeding internally. And the owner seeing that traumatic event knew something was probably wrong, but just his vital signs, young puppy coming in, all of his vitals were normal when he first came in, but watching him, he pretty quickly decompensated. But knowing how upset the owner was and knowing that she obviously saw something pretty traumatic, we kept a really close eye on him and caught it really quickly. So the owners really do, you know, they know their pet more than we do. And we just need to make sure that we maintain that respect for what they're seeing at home and what they're trying to tell us.
I love that you say that they really do know their pet more than us. And, you know, when they say, "Doc, I know that there's something wrong. I know that there's something wrong." I really want us to believe them, because something is wrong. And yeah, we might have to dig a little bit more to figure out what's going on, but they see them every day in and day out. Now with the pandemic and everything, I feel like they know more of what their cues are. So that's really helpful. So what are some tips that you would give to the veterinary technician that is just starting out in emergency and critical care? I know from traveling in the conferences this past year, very, very popular. The vet techs absolutely love the ER and critical care. So what are some tips you could give them?
The biggest tip I would give a new technician is, if you are concerned about the patient at all, if you are concerned about the owner at all, bring the pet to the back, get some help. One of the things that we have to be very careful with is criticizing technicians or criticizing new staff, even front desk staff, that bring patients to the back or bring patients to our attention that maybe aren't having an emergency, and use that as a time to have a discussion and point out, you know, what we're kind of looking at. But anytime someone is concerned about a pet, anytime someone is concerned about the degree of the client's concern, they need to seek help if they're not confident in what's going on. And we need to make sure that they feel confident doing that. So make sure you're in a hospital, you're on a team where, you know, if you have a question, if you have a concern about a pet, that you feel comfortable bringing it up. And so that would be my biggest tip, you know, just keep looking, and then always look at your patients, even if it's a patient that's already been triaged, that's in your hospital, that is been hospitalized, look at how that patient looks. If someone says, oh, this patient is painful, or oh, this patient is decompensating, or oh, this patient has this going on, really look at how that patient is presenting and how that patient looks. You know, watch respiratory patterns in the hospital. So when you see it in an emergency situation, it'll be so much easier for you to be like, oh, I saw that last week when that, right, you know, patient was decompensating in the hospital, and that looks like a respiratory pattern that, you know, is decompensating, and start picking up those things. So, you know, always use those opportunities and always make sure you're aware of the patients, and use those training opportunities. But if you have any concerns at all, you know, ask for help or bring those patients back. In emergency medicine, it's really about that initial assessment and getting these pets help right away. And, you know, you might get it wrong once in a while. Like, I remember being a new technician, and I put a patient that was experiencing a GDV in a room because I wasn't experienced enough with the vital signs. And, you know, it happens sometimes, and we need to make sure we're working as a team. But if you have any concerns at all, just alert someone more experienced that can help you.
Yeah, very, very helpful. Thank you. And my last question for you that I see get tossed around a little bit is when or when not to, you know, I guess in my world, I feel like you never go wrong with this, but to set a catheter, an IV catheter, when they're coming in, whatever reason it is, at what point do you jump to place in one? Should it go in right away? Like, what's your take on that?
You know, it's kind of interesting. I do feel like, you know, most patients that come in the ER need blow by oxygen and an IV catheter until proven otherwise.
Right.
You know, having IV access in a patient is so important that it is very inconvenient to wait until they're so down, that we're trying to place it, and it's even harder to place. And so I would say, based on the patient's history, based on how they look coming in the hospital, if it's something, you know, that's going to need medical attention, I would place a catheter. Of course, every hospital is going to be different, and you need to make sure that your team is on board with that type of a protocol. But if it's a situation that is going to need medical treatment, I would go ahead and place a catheter. If you're concerned at all that that patient is going to need meds quickly, if you're concerned at all that that patient may arrest, absolutely get a catheter in as soon as you can, because putting a catheter in prior to arrest is so much easier than placing a catheter after we have an arrest or a decompensation. So,
excellent. Great. Well, Erica Brent, not only did you give us 5 tips, I think you gave us like about 50. So this is great. Where can we learn more about you? Are you on LinkedIn, or where can we find you?
I do have a LinkedIn account. I'm not very active on social media, but I do like to do the occasional conference. So I'm out there. If anyone has any specific questions or wants to get in touch with me, probably the best thing is my email. I'm at erica.brandt@westvet.net. If anybody wants to email me, and we can get together and talk about emergency cases.
Love it. And we'll put that in the show notes as well to our listeners as well. So thank you so much, Erica, for all you do. And we got to give a huge shout out to your fellow veterinary technicians out there, right? Thank you to everybody for all your hard work.
Right. Absolutely. You guys are awesome. Keep fighting the good fight.
Right. Amen to that. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Don't forget to rate this awesome podcast out here with Erica and myself. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals, and always stay pawsome.